The Bible is full of contradictions. Contradicts itself over and over. In one place it says one thing, in another place it says something else. Have you ever heard that? Have you ever thought that? Well, if you pay close attention to what I'm going to talk about today, it's going to help you to overcome what seems to be some contradictions in the Bible. It all boils down to a very simple idea, rightly dividing or rightly cutting the word. Now, as we get started, imagine for a moment that you came over to my house for a visit, and as we sat and talked, I shared with you a letter from a friend who lives in New Zealand. I'm super excited about the letter because not only does this friend tell me all about the beautiful countryside and the history of New Zealand, the culture and the food, I like the food part, he also filled me in on what's been going on with his family for the past several years. How a rich relative died and left him $100 million, this ginormous estate, just mind-blowing, crazy, amazing stuff going on with this guy. Now, not only that, but my friend who had addressed the letter to me specifically and mailed it to me, my friend says this. He says, "I am inviting you and your family to come to New Zealand. I have great things in store for you when you arrive. I promise that half of my estate is yours, half of the property, half of all the assets. When you arrive, it's going to be placed in your name. It's yours. I promise you, come on over." I know that's a pretty unbelievable scenario, but hang with me, okay? Although this letter was written to me, addressed to me, and intended for me, if you were to read it, you would learn some great things about what New Zealand looks like. You'd learn about the countryside. You'd learn about some of the history of New Zealand. You'd learn about the culture and the food. And so reading the letter would be beneficial for you. But what would happen if you try to take a letter specifically addressed to me with promises made to me, promises to me from my friend, and you decided to claim those promises for you? It's not your letter. It wasn't sent to you. The friend has no idea who you even are, but yet you get excited. Well, this is awesome. You go buy an airline ticket. You fly to New Zealand. You show up at my friend's house. You knock on the door. He answers and you say, "Here I am. I'm ready to collect half of the estate." How do you think my friend would respond? He would probably say, "Are you out of your mind? How in the world did you get the crazy idea that you were a part of this estate here in New Zealand?" And so you would respond, "Well, I read it in a letter." And let me quote, "I am inviting you and your family to come to New Zealand. I have great things in store for you when you arrive. I promise that half of my estate is yours, half of the property, half of all my assets. When you arrive, it will be placed in your name. It's yours, I promise. Come on over." "Well, I read it. I believe it. I claim it. That settles it. Here I am." My friend would say, "Don't you realize that letter was not addressed to you? I didn't send it to you. That was to a specific person. I can't believe you tried applying that to you. You must be so disappointed." Now, imagine that scenario. You took a letter written to someone else, me, a letter that was beneficial and educational for you to read on several levels. You learned about the history of New Zealand. You learned about the culture. You learned about an amazing relationship with my friend and I that must have gone back way, way, way back many years. All of that is great information. But then when you tried to take that letter written to me and apply it to you, when you tried to take a promise made to me and apply it to you, it led to massive confusion, disappointment, and disillusionment, right? You might get, you know, fed up with the whole idea of even reading letters because they're so disappointing. Now, I know that's kind of a crazy illustration, and you would never treat a letter like that, at least I hope. I would hope that you would be able to realize that although all of us can learn something from any letter, the letter itself has special significance to the person it is written to. You can't take a letter specifically written to another person and apply it all to you. No thinking person is going to do that. But you know what? That's exactly what we are all guilty of at times when it comes to the scripture. Now, this book we call the Bible, word Bible, by the way, means book. This book is not just one book. It's a collection of 66 books and letters written by about 40 different authors over about 1,500 years. And although it's all inspired by God, and we can read all of it to learn from it, if you try to take everything written in here and apply it to yourself personally, it's going to lead to confusion, disappointment, and disillusionment. Why? Because within this collection of books and letters, there are certain sections that are specifically addressed to certain people. Now, it is all here for our benefit. All of the scriptures combined provide a wide panoramic view of what God is doing from beginning until the end, on to the new heaven and new earth, and then into eternity. But throughout this collection of books, we see God doing different things with different people in different ways, with certain instructions and application that don't apply to all people for all time and every place. Like sacrificing sheep. That's why in his very last letter, a letter written from prison just before his execution, the Apostle Paul gives some final instructions to Timothy, and we've been looking at these over the last couple of days. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, Starting around verse 14, Paul says this: remind them of these things, charging them before the Lord not to strive about words to no profit, to the ruin of the hearers. Instead, be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more ungodliness, and their message will spread like cancer. Now look back at verse 15. He says, be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Now the word diligent we saw yesterday means to work hard. Carries with it actually the idea of agony, sweating, putting effort into something. It means to exert oneself. The word translated as approved is a word that applied to examining money to see whether or not it was counterfeit or real. And he talks about a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Now, the idea is that there are going to be a lot of people who at some point will be ashamed when they realize how wrong they have been about certain things. They'll be ashamed because they've missed the point, gone off track, let other people off track, and didn't really get the message. So he says, be diligent, dig in, make sure you are rightly dividing the word of truth. Now, the word that the New King James translates as dividing literally means to cut or to cut straight. Now, when it comes to dividing things that are written, there are times when we cut up sentences, right? You probably remember doing that in junior high school, diagramming sentences. You would literally cut apart the sentence, making sure you knew what the subject of the sentence was, the action that was taking place, the object of that action. You would look at the adverbs and the adjectives that would describe what was going on. And rightly cutting the sentence would help you to understand more clearly what was being said. Along with that, there are times when you needed to look up words because if you didn't know what the words themselves meant, you would be lost. On top of that, you need to know the context of that sentence within the framework of a paragraph, the paragraph in a chapter, that chapter in the book, and so on. That's a form of cutting. But guys, listen, what I'm proposing to you right now, what I believe, what I am sharing, is that when it comes to the Bible, there's an aspect to it that many people seem to miss, and it's more than diagramming a sentence. And because we miss it, we end up very, very confused with very conflicting ideas because we take things that were addressed to other people and apply them to us. And we combine that with things that are addressed to us and we try to make it all conform together and it just doesn't work. And it leads people to say the Bible is contradicting itself. In one place it says we can only eat vegetables. In another it says we can eat everything. Then another, it tells us a lot of stuff we can't eat and even call certain things an abomination. Then in another place, it says it's okay to eat those abominable things and it will have nothing to do with our standing with God. That's confusing. Not only that, when it comes to the issue of the ultimate salvation of humans, some of what Jesus said makes it sound like it's all based upon our works. How well we feed a certain group of people, clothe them, take care of those in need, and if we don't get it just right, we're sunk. But then along comes Paul teaching something completely contradictory, saying that it's not of works, but instead it's all grace through faith. So which is it? Is it works or is it grace? Some would say, well, it's both. You got to have both. Well, Paul would say you can't mix them. A little leaven leavens a whole lump. And we say, ugh, I'm so confused. What's the problem? We aren't rightly cutting. And we'll talk more about that next time. I'm James Flanders. I'm learning to walk the path of grace, and I'm so happy that you're walking along with me. Be blessed, my friend, and have a great day.